Right, I'll try and put this out of the way. So, in May, I had the opportunity of travelling to Israel. How many people here would like to go to Israel? Hands up. Yeah, I'm thinking maybe half the church. Yeah, and to everybody who didn't put your hand up, that's how I was about 3 months ago before I went. I had no desire whatsoever to go to Israel. And I don't know why. It just wasn't on my list. If I had money to go somewhere, I would have gone somewhere else. But my father turned 70, and we wanted to do something for him. And he was weighing up, should we go to Switzerland? I'm thinking, yes, Switzerland. I've never been to Switzerland. And then he said, no, Israel. I want to go to Israel. I'm thinking, oh, no. And it just wasn't, there was just nothing. I mean, I've read this book from cover to cover, and I feel like I know it. So I just had no desire to go. But we went, and it was amazing. And now I go back. So what I wanted to do is, there was a few things, a few places really, that really I felt God spoke to me, and I wanted to share that with you. And one of those places was Gethsemane. And we've talked about it many times, we've heard Gethsemane many times. Let's go for another hands up. How many people know what Gethsemane means? Does anybody want to shout out? Can anybody tell us what does Gethsemane mean? And that's probably a long enough pause. I had to find it in the notes here. It means olive press. Okay, the place where the olives are pressed. And that is why, for anybody who noticed, I have some of Asda's finest olive oil here. And also some of the posh stuff that you put in your salads. So, olive oil, Gethsemane, that's all it means. The place where the olives are pressed. And you'll see in the background there, some olive trees. And as we traveled around Israel, what I saw is lots of places where there were olive trees and olive presses. So, I'm going to take you on a very short, you'll be pleased to know, because I came back with 800 photos. You're getting 25 this morning, so breathe a sigh of relief. I am not going to torture you. So, and it works as well. This is Terry's, actually, a little wonderful gadget that makes it go back and forward. If it gets out of sync, it's my fault. So, Gethsemane. This is a sculpture. I can't remember the artist's name. If you'd like to know, I can find out for you. At some point, I'd probably like to speak to you about there's not just one sculpture of Jesus this guy has done. He has done an amazing sculpture called the Fountain of Tears. And I believe it's been replicated now in Germany. So you can visit this in Israel, you can visit it in Germany, and it's basically Jesus on the cross, and there's seven depictions of Jesus. This is an eighth depiction, and it also has Holocaust survivors. So someday I would like to share a bit about that, or if you'd like, I can give you the website and you can go and watch a little video online. But I'm sure looking at this resonated with me. I only take pictures of things I'm interested in and I like, and it's just, it's beautiful and it's awful at the same time. Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, he wouldn't have had a cup in his hand, but he prayed, take this cup away from me, the cup of suffering. And you can see the anguish there. Gethsemane. So I'm going to read a few passages, starting with Matthew 26.
very familiar passage again,
titled Gethsemane, which means olive press. So Matthew 26, starting at verse 36, "Then Jesus went with his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, 'Sit here while I go over there and pray.' He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, 'My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me.' Going a little further, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, 'My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will.' Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. 'Could you men not keep watch with me for 1 hour?' he asked Peter. 'Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak.' He went away a second time and prayed, 'My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done.' And when he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. So he left them and went away once more and prayed the third time, saying the same thing. Then he returned to the disciples and said to them, 'Are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour is near, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer.'" Amen. So, I probably should have said, but this is Gethsemane. These are pictures taken from the Garden of Gethsemane, which is preserved in Jerusalem. I can't say if it is the same garden that Jesus was in, but these are pictures of olive trees and flowers, as you would expect to find in a garden, and it's just beautiful. And of course, it would have been nighttime. Jesus, you know, you go and see something that's beautiful in the day, might not be quite so beautiful at night. Those things that were catching your eye might be terrifying, you know, the nightmares that you had as a child, sometimes we can have them as adults. But it seems to have been a favorite place of Jesus, that he went to Gethsemane and certainly the Mount of Olives. And there were a lot of olive trees in this garden. So, Matthew 2. Verse 19, the return to Nazareth. So we know Jesus was taken to Egypt by his parents, afraid that Herod might kill him. But after Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who are trying to take the child's life are dead." So he got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. And so was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, "He will be called a Nazarene." Galilee. I had in my head that this was huge. Now, you read about the disciples when they were on the boat and it was a storm came up and they couldn't see the shore. I thought this must be massive. And yet, from every shore, you can see the opposite shore. So that must have been one storm, or multiple storms, I think, in different situations, that they couldn't see the hills surrounding the Lake of Galilee. And isn't it beautiful? I mean, this is spring, and it might after a hot summer. It might not be looking so green and pleasant, but it was lovely. And you can see, ooh, the pointer works. Can you see that? That is Tiberias, if you remember reading about that. I can't remember what happened in Tiberias, but we stayed in that town for a few nights, toured the region of the Galilee. Could this be Scotland? Would anybody agree with me? This was taken outside what they believe to be the historic town of Chorazin, which was one of the towns Jesus cursed. And I don't know if you can see some of the rubble. It certainly had the look to me of somewhere that had been cursed. But it also, to me, looks like any hillside in Scotland on a good spring or summer's day. And lots of Galilee was like this, green and beautiful. And I was like, this isn't the picture I had in my head when I thought I was going to Israel. I was thinking about desert and rocks and boulders, but this was just lovely. And if I can get this pointer thing to work, there was also so many vineyards. And it just struck me, you know, I could show you dozens of photos like this. I took video as we were driving along, and someday maybe I'll manage to compile that into something that people would actually want to watch. But everywhere, they were even on a dry, sandy, barren bit of land. They were building these huge berms, putting this lining around them, and they were making fish farms in the middle of a desert. And it was just amazing. They had so many orchards. They export bananas from Israel. And they had these polytunnels, and it was just, it kind of blew my mind that land that was considered worthless a century ago, so worthless that the Arabs and others who lived there sold it to the Jews who came back to live there. And they have been so industrious. And this is one of the vineyards that's been planted. I was able to taste the wine. I couldn't afford it. It was too expensive, some sort of boutique winery. But we were allowed a taste, and it was beautiful. And it just made me kind of start to realize, like when we read about the lives of people in the Bible, scenes like this were very much part of their lives. Nazareth could be any Mediterranean town. And I believe it's an Arab town mostly now. There are Jews and Christians that live there, but a very modern town or city. And while it wasn't the birthplace of Jesus, I don't know if you can see this building here. I got some really good photos of this church I'd like to share with you. The Church of the Annunciation has all these pictures of Mary up on they've got like I'm not even sure what, a mezzanine or something, but anyway, they've got this thing around the church, and Christians from around the world, or churches from around the world, have had these works of art depicting Mary, and they've put them all up. It's just stunning, really beautiful. And that sits over what was believed to be Mary's home, so where the angel Gabriel appeared to her. And of course, Joseph, although he wasn't from Nazareth, he was from Bethlehem, eventually they settled there. And that's where we believe Jesus grew up. Now, right in the center of this town, and you can see some of the modern buildings there at the top, there is a reconstruction of Nazareth Village. And it's, you know, you go to these touristy places and they got people dressed up, and there was a guy there that they called Abraham in a shepherd's outfit, and they had other people doing stuff with wool and other people with pottery and things. And sure, that was great. But For me, what stood out was, again, the olive trees. And beautiful one there. Also, the terraces. I get really excited about terraces, I don't know why. But we've got a lot of hills in Scotland, and if I can plug my book, and I don't know if I was talking to Terry or someone else about it the other day, and they said, you didn't put any of that in your book. And I'm saying, didn't I? Maybe I didn't. But I was certainly thinking about it when I wrote it, is that we have all these hills and mountains, and you go to other countries, and people do things with these hills and mountains, and we just put sheep on them. And it's like, why? Why? But you can see here the path that's winding its way up, and if I move forward, you have a terrace. And so you've got this slope. You can't do much on a slope. So what they do, they put a wall, and you all know this, so I'm, you know. But anyway, it excites me, so I'm going to say it. So you build a wall, and you flatten it out, and then you can grow something. You can do something productive with that land. And so that's what they've done here in this reconstruction of the village. And you can see at the top, you've got a terrace, and then you've got a trellis. And I remembered, because I was worried that I wouldn't remember those two words. But you've got your trellis, and on top of the trellis, you've got a vine. And of course, so many times it speaks about vines, and Jesus talks about vines. And he grew up. And this probably wasn't where Jesus grew up. It was a village, as far as we can tell. And I'll get to that. But again, so here's another thing that I find fascinating. The watchtower. I don't know if you've ever thought about the watchtower and what that was like. I never considered that it might be quite small. If you have a watchtower, you want it to be tall, you want it to be high so that you can see a long way. But no, why do you need that? You just need a little bit raised so that you can look over the hill, look over the valley, and you can see if people are coming to rob you or coming to attack you. So there's your watchman. He's got his own trellis. Maybe there would have been a roof there to protect him. Not that it rains all that much, but maybe protect him from the heat of the sun. I like that. And this is what I'm wanting to get to. So how do we know this used to be a village? Because they had a wine press. And if you grow vines, you get grapes, and then you take them to your wine press, and you crush them. And you'll have been singing your songs, and you've been laughing and joking, and they'd have been bringing the big baskets of grapes, and they'd have dumped them in the wine press. And can you see that? Just, you know, it's a kind of a square shape, and you've got the kind of rounded, you know, it's not much to look at, but I don't know, I don't want to block your view either, but can you see this channel? A little channel. So you have your wine press, you've got a channel coming out of it into a wine bath. Now, can you imagine having a bath in some wine? Well, you could have done, but I don't think they'd have let you because they were wanting to drink that stuff. But they would have taken their wineskins and they would have filled them. And, it just got me thinking. This was how Jesus grew up. This was his childhood. That he would have participated in the bringing of the grapes, the harvesting, and probably stamped a few, something I could, shall I say this, a bit in Revelation where it talks about the wine press of God's wrath. Yeah, that's maybe not such a pleasant thing to think about. But I'm sure that at the time, it was quite an enjoyable experience. And, you know, what was he, 30 years old, we believe, when he started his ministry? I'm sure he had many summers harvesting and participating in the crushing of the wine press. And not just the wine press, they wouldn't have just planted vines, olive trees. And if you have olives, well, they wouldn't have had tractors, they wouldn't have had lorries, so they would have had their wine press close to where the olives were grown. And this big round stone here weighs half a ton. That's a pretty serious bit of kit. You wouldn't like that rolling over your toe, would you? But they have this fairly simple contraption. And again, if you'd like, you can go on YouTube. You can actually see some video taken at this village, the Nazareth village. And they would have either had a donkey pulling that big lever around, or in the video, they had a couple of the tourists, guys like me, pushing it around. But they would have dumped the olives in this kind of enclosure. They'd have rolled a stone around, and it would have crushed the olives. And then, this maybe gives you a better idea of scale, they would have, and you can't really see this, so apologies, it's a bit blurry, but they'd have gotten a basket, and they had these woven baskets. Oh, why not? Not like this, not a woven basket like this. Something that was flexible, that could hold a large amount of olives, or not the olives actually, the pulp, after they'd been crushed by that stone. And then, I don't know if you can see here, they'd have put the baskets under a press, and for those of you that I'm blocking, so just here, and they'd have stacked them up. You might have had two or three or four of them. And then, and I still don't fully understand how they used this, but these stones would have been used as weights to press the olives. And I'm not sure, I didn't catch what was being said, didn't ask the question, so someday I would love to find out. So I don't know if they put one stone on for the first pressing, or if they put them all on for the first pressing. They could have done either. But, back to my props, I do like my props. Extra virgin olive oil. And if you read on the back, it says superior category olive oil obtained directly from olives. Well, you're not going to do it from grapes, are you? And solely by mechanical means. Well, that can't get more mechanical than that, can you? So, that is an olive press, and really it's not just this, it's also the crusher, that big stone crusher, and then the press. And there would have been one of these at Gethsemane, because it wouldn't have been called Gethsemane if it didn't have an olive press, because that's what it means. It's like, you know, going to the supermarket. If there is no supermarket, you don't call it a supermarket. So this was the place of the olive press. And, yeah, extra virgin olive oil. So, first pressing. What do we know about first pressings? So, Old Testament scholars here. You give the first fruits to God. Okay, so the first pressing would have been maybe not all of it, I don't know what quantities, but certainly a substantial proportion would have been sacrificed. And maybe it would have been made into bread, and they sacrificed the bread on the altar, or it would have been poured out on the altar, or made into incense, and that would have been burned on the altar. But it was given to God. First pressing. Second pressing. This is what we put in our pans to cook with. So the second pressing would have been used for eating, you know, for cooking, for putting on your salads. We put this stuff on our salads, but they might have put the second pressing. Third pressing, I don't have a container for third pressing. It wasn't considered of much value, but it was used to light the lamps. So still has some value. It wasn't certainly wasted. Three pressings, and some of you know where I'm going with this. Isaiah 53, 1-7. Let's turn back to that. Who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot, and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him. Nothing in his appearance that we should desire him.
He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and familiar with suffering, like one from whom men hide their faces. He was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he took up our infirmities and he carried our sorrows. Yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away, and who can speak of his descendants? For he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgression of my people he was stricken. He was assigned a grave with the wicked. And we believe this is talking about Jesus. A couple of things from this passage. You see these little shoots coming up? I didn't know this. I've been going about my gardening all wrong for so many years. If you plant an olive seed, you will not get a fruitful olive tree because you only have half of the DNA. But if you plant, or transplant rather, a shoot like one of these, you get the full DNA and your olive tree will be fruitful from the get-go. So if you want an orchard and you have a good olive tree, all you have to do is somehow, I don't know how they do it, but somehow transplant these shoots into ground and you can grow yourself an orchard of fruitful olive trees. So, and then crushed for our iniquities. Jesus, crushed for our iniquities. Well, you saw some close-ups of the Garden of Gethsemane before. So here's a wide-angle shot. This is the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem. And you can see terraces going up. And on those terraces, you can see trees. And of course, not all of those trees are olive trees, but back then, it's quite likely many of them, if not all, would have been. Otherwise, why would it have been called the Mount of Olives? But it stretches, and this doesn't give you the full scale. It's more like the Campses. So, you know, quite a wide hill, not a, like whatever that is, a conical shape. And down, well, no, gone too fast here. Where's my wee lasery thing? Gethsemane, the Garden of Gethsemane, down in the right-hand side there. And this is a different perspective, so we've come away to the left, now a bit higher, and this is a good overview of Jerusalem. And you can see in the center the Dome of the Rock. I won't say too much about that, but that is the Muslim temple, which is believed to stand over the summit of Mount Moriah. And if you remember better than I did, because this was kind of like, did I know this? And I don't think I did know this. But that's where Abraham took Isaac to be sacrificed. And that's where the temples were built, the Jewish temples. And now a temple to a foreign god stands there. But you can see there's a little slope going down up to the Mount of Olives. And if I zoom in, you can see better. Again, you've got the temple there, Dome of the Rock. You've got the old city walls. It makes me think of York, if anybody's been there. And you've got a little slope down into the valley and then up to the Mount of Olives. And there in the center, that is where the Garden of Gethsemane is.
too fast. So I want to read one more passage, Luke 22. From verse 39.
Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, "Pray that you will not fall into temptation." He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down and prayed, "Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done." An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him, and being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. When he rose from prayer and went back to the disciples, he found them asleep, exhausted from sorrow. "Why are you sleeping?" he asked them. "Get up and pray, so that you will not fall into temptation."
So again, we're back to the Garden of Gethsemane. And this tree really caught my eye. You can see it's leaning on a rock there, as if it can't hold its own weight. And the trunk looks like it's been through a battle. It's been fighting to grow. To me, that looks tortured. It looks anguished. And it makes me think of Jesus. So if I go back to this sculpture, which is called Gethsemane, I just want to finish off with a couple of thoughts, really. When Jesus was growing up in Nazareth, and he was stomping those grapes, as I believe he did, when he was helping take in the olive harvest, and perhaps maybe he was leading the donkey on round and round in a circle, pulping the olives, or maybe helping to attach the stones to the olive press. Did he have it in his mind as a child or a young man, "This is going to be me when I'm an adult, that I am going to be pressed and crushed"? And I wonder if he did know. It certainly seems like we're not told very much about Jesus' childhood at all, but the way he was debating in the temple when his parents had lost him and they found him there, seems that he had a great knowledge from a young age. We know that when Mary and Elizabeth met, when the babies were in their womb, the Holy Spirit caused one of the babies to jump on meeting. I think it was it Elizabeth? Thank you, Margaret. Elizabeth, her baby jumped on meeting their Savior. And when Jesus was in the garden, did he think back to his childhood? Did he think back? And why did he pray three times? He could have prayed once. It'd have been sufficient. But did he have in his mind that if an olive is to be turned into oil, it has to be pressed three times? I don't know. But I'd like to leave you with those thoughts that Jesus, whatever his thinking was, he prayed three times, "Father, I do not want to have to go through the agony I am about to go through. I do not want to have to suffer. But not my will, but yours be done, Father." And he did that for us. He did that for me. He did that for you. And maybe that's enough to take that with you into this week. I've asked Vivian if we can sing Thank You, Jesus. Would that be okay if we do that now?